Lord, thank you for this morning. Thank you for our time to study your word. Thank you for time to just dig into eschatology and end times. And Lord, I pray that we are gracious to each other, different views in this room and probably from every position. So I just pray that we respect each other, love each other, and know that we can have different views in this thinking in end times and eschatology. So I just pray that we love each other through it. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. Okay, so we're going to we'll write on the board what last week was for the outline for that view. Who remembers the view that we were looking at last week?
What passage?
Matthew 24.
Premillennial.
But also pre-trib. So when we looked at Matthew 24, there's kind of the number two view on your paper, if you look at, was pre-tribulational, premillennial. That view is all, when we look at Matthew 24, it's future. Everything's in the future. That view is probably, that's out of the four, that view is the only view that believes that all this is future. Okay. Out of the other three, when you look at Matthew 24, we see a preterist view, where we see, and I'm going to say partial preterist, because they wouldn't believe that the coming of Christ has already happened, or the new heavens or the new earth. Okay. So the other views would believe that we're going through the tribulation, or we're in the tribulation. And so we look at Matthew 24 as things in the past. Okay? So verses, 4 through 14 on Matthew. Let's go to Matthew 24. Let's look at verses 4 through 14 are going to be the tribulation and the birth pains, the beginning of the birth pains. So tribulation, beginning of the birth pains. Starting in verse 15, does anybody remember what that was? 15 through 20, what is it? 15 through 28. Does anybody remember what that was called? If you think about it, we're talking about the abomination of desolation, the first 3.5 years from Daniel, where the peace treaty was signed. We're in the tribulation, the beginnings of birth pains, and then the abomination of desolation happens. He breaks that peace treaty. He sets it up in the temple. Himself is God, the Antichrist, and then is the second 3.5 years. What's that?
Time of Jacob's trouble.
Okay, but what is in this passage, Matthew 24, it's specifically the great tribulation. So now we're into the great tribulation in 15 through 28. And then in verses 29 on, you're going to see the second coming. And if you remember anything, if you remember about the second coming in this view, it comes in two different phases. Christ comes back, but then there's the 1,000-year millennium, and then there's judgment, the resurrection of the unbelievers at the end, and then there's judgment, new heavens and new earth. So there's kind of two phases within that second coming. So, but 29 through the end of chapter 25 is the second coming. Yes, it's dealing with the second coming. Because you'll see parables in chapter 25 that are dealing with the second coming. Kind of remember some of that? Okay, so the second view we're going to look at today would be from an amillennialist, a postmillennialist, or even that first view where you've got a premillennialist, but they're not pre-tribulation. Okay, so all the other three views could fit into this next how we're going to talk about this today. But there's multiple understandings within that, and you can't even exhaust them all. There's just little different variances within that. No different than the futurist view would look at some of those things and look at a little bit differently. You can't exhaust it with one view and say, oh, this is it. So when we look at this one, we're going to look at everything from this view up through verse 35. 4 through 35 has all passed. Has all already happened.
Should I just call this other views?
Put it as a partial preterist view. Oh, for the other, oh, you mean the other three, yeah. Yeah, you could put all three other views, that's fine. And then it's partial preterist, but are you talking about the all-millennial view or the post-millennial view? Or
I'm talking
about
what I'm writing.
Okay. Right, but when you're referring to what view?
I'll just stand here.
Okay. So what we're looking at, this view we would call a partial preterist view from Matthew 24. Partial preterist view. So that when I say, does everybody understand when I say that? What I mean when I say that?
No.
No. Okay. So all three of these views, number 1, 3, and 4,
okay,
will go down the road of a partial preterist.
Oh, so they're in one category, but
yes.
Then in that category, they're divided out a little bit. No.
All three of those views, 1, 3, and 4. So if you're a premillennialist, if you're a postmillennialist, or an amillennialist,
you're in that category.
You will view chapter 24 of Matthew as a partial preterist, everything being in the past. That help?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Preterist means past, just Latin for past. So
okay.
you just believe everything is in the past.
But they're partial preterists, so not.
But
everything.
Partial meaning that the end, starting in 36 through the end of 25, is the second coming of Christ, and they would believe that that is future. Okay, so in our timeline, partial preterist.
So I write partial
preterist. Yeah, partial preterist. It from Matthew 24 is going to believe verses 4 through 35.
4 to what?
4 through 35 is past, has happened, and is basically is been finished at 70 A.D.
You gonna explain how they get there?
Yes, I am.
I got it.
I'm sure. I had to hear it too when I first started looking at it. I was like, man, how do you get that? Okay. And then 36 through the end of 25 is the second coming of Christ.
The end of 25?
Yep.
What's that verse number?
Oh, sorry.
That's a good question. 46. If
yes.
It's the end of 25.
Yep, 46. Okay. So now the only difference in those three views is that the premillennial, when you look at number one, there, that is second coming. They would see that second coming in two parts, just like the pre-tribulation person would, because they have the second coming, and then there's the thousand-year millennial reign, and then the judgment and the new heavens and new earth. Where the amillennial view and the postmillennial view, they would just say it's all coming at the end of the millennium. And it's all in one shot. Okay? And that isn't the goal of this Matthew 24, but just so you understand there, that's the one variance that would probably be in that.
But the amillennialists don't believe in the millennium, so how can they wait till the end of the millennium?
it's a realized millennium. that's why they don't like the name amillennialist, just because they wouldn't say there's no millennium. They would just say it's realized now from the time of the cross to the second coming. So the first advent to the second advent, they believe the millennium's happening right now in heaven where Christ is reigning on the throne where he is.
It's not literal.
It's not literal thousand years. It's just a time frame because we wouldn't look at the revelation and take all those numbers literal, you know.
Gotcha.
Understand that as a... Okay. Okay. So, we good with these two? Gives you a little bit of a something to look at too as we're going through. So now this is really simple. Everything, well, it's not really simple. But everything that we're going to go through today through verse 35 has already happened by 70 AD. And if you look at that and you read that, you'll probably go, just like Dad, because he knows Matthew 24, and he's going, are you kidding me? Because when you look at it, you go, obviously there's some things talking about the second coming. It seems to be.
Am I done?
You're done. Thank you. And a partial preterist is not heretical. They wouldn't believe that the second coming has already happened or anything like that. So they have an understanding that that isn't the second coming. Okay? A full preterist would say that's the second coming, or it could be, and it's already happened. That's heretical. We don't go down that road. That's why we're not even going to bother even going through that view. Okay? Okay, so let's just start in 24. And here's the thing. We're not going to, the point isn't to grab every detail of this passage. It's to get an understanding. And you might not agree, and that's okay. It's just, this is the view. And there's a couple places I may struggle a little bit even explaining, because I have a hard time wrapping my mind around it a little bit. Okay? And most scholars would sit and say, okay, look at Matthew 24. Every one of them has problems, every view. If the scholars are being honest with themselves, they're looking at it going, with these views that we have, they're saying that there's a problem, there's problems in every one of them. But most would say, how can we be fair to the passage and have the least amount of problems at the end? That's what a lot of them come to, and that's what a lot have basically decided on. That's where they come. Yes.
No, I don't want to go down a rabbit trail. Yep. I don't want you to have to do that. But I just a real quick.
Yep.
Okay, we're looking at Matthew 24.
Yep.
And you're saying that the preterists are saying that it's all 70 AD except for the second coming.
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So how does that relate to the bowl, seal, trumpet judgments of Revelation that hasn't happened?
Right. But they would say those are happening in this tribulation period from the first advent of Christ to the second advent of Christ. It's the whole thing. Some would say it's all happened in 78, before 70 AD. I wouldn't say that. I would say from 6 to 18 in Revelation, it's the whole period of the tribulation. We would call that from the first advent of Christ to the second coming. That's the whole time frame.
So assuming there's no 7-year tribulation.
There is no 7-year tribulation.
So,
so none of those views believe in a literal 7-year tribulation except if pre-tribulationists. Nobody else would. None of the other ones do. Okay. So that's how they understand that. Okay. Okay. So Matthew 24. If you look in 23, the big thing is, what does Jesus talk about? He's giving the woes to the Pharisees, and he's basically pronouncing judgment on them. And then at the end of chapter 23, he says, "Your house is left to you desolate." And at that time, Jesus leaves the temple and goes to the Mount of Olives. And some would argue, man, there's great symbolism here, that even from, I think it's in Ezekiel somewhere, I don't remember where it is, where it's talking about God, his presence leaves the temple and actually leaves and heads east to the Mount of Olives. And it's like his presence leaves the temple. And it's like here you got this kind of the same thing, that Jesus pronounces judgment on them and then leaves and then heads over to the Mount of Olives. And then, chapter 24, Jesus left the temple, was going away when his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple. But he answered them, "You see all these, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down." So the disciples are looking back at the temple saying, because they're like looking, going, man, this thing's going to be desolate. And they're looking back saying, man, look at this place. And Jesus says, not one stone's going to be left on top of another. Now, if you remember, the first view, because I won't even go down that road, because we're going to come back one more time next week, and we're going to compare the two together. We're going to walk through it, and we're going to say, this view said this, this view said this. Okay? So hopefully by then, maybe you'll be sick of going through it, but hopefully you'll be looking at it going, I can see the two differences, okay? So, he sat, verse 3. He sat on the Mount of Olives. The disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of the close of the age?" So there's kind of two, three questions being asked here. When will these things be? First one. And this next one kind of ties together, because there's a definite article tying the two. It's saying, "And what will be the sign of your coming and the close of the age?" So let's lump it together as two questions. This view would say, tell me when these things will be. What things? The things that they were just talking, where Jesus just said, not one stone's going to be left upon another. That's what he's saying. So now this question right here is answered in 4 through 35. When will these things be? Talking about that temple being destroyed. Literally happens in 70 AD. So this is the time leading up to that destruction. Everything then, meaning partial preterist, passed. All passed, except the second coming of Christ. Which sounds great, but then you get some challenging verses that you come upon as you go through here. But they would argue and say, you can't say this is future, because this is talking specifically about the destruction of the temple. There's local things that are happening here. How do you get away from it? So, verse 4, and Jesus answered them. So this is the answer. When will these things be? Out of the two questions, 4 through 35. So everybody's there, right? 4 through 35. Past, talking about the temple. That's what we're talking about. "See that no one leads you astray, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and they will lead many astray. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are but the beginning of the birth pains." Okay, so this is what's leading up. So from 33, they would say this is what's leading from 33 AD up to 70 AD, the destruction of the temple. These are the birth pains. There's going to be wars and rumors of wars, which we seem to think, well, that's always been and always will be. But honestly, at that time in Rome, there was peace. What's it called? Pax Romana. Mono? Okay. So there's peace in Rome. And so to say roars and rumors of wars, does that start? It's kind of like, oh, really? Okay. And then it does start to happen. There starts to be some civil wars. There starts to be some problems. And there's wars and rumors of wars, things that are happening all over during this time. Because at that time, man, when things rised up, if there was a insurrection or people that rose up against them, man, they were stomped out. It was done with Rome. They just took care of you. But you started to see that. So between the time of 33, that's what we're talking about, 33 AD and 70, these things are going to start to happen. There starts to be false Christ. There starts to be people that are actually claiming to be Christ. One historian, I think, said there was like 17 major false Christs that were during this time that were claiming to be Christ.
Which would explain that so many of the books, Paul talking so much about false teachers and,
right,
and such.
Totally. Yeah. So this is that time. So this is what's happening between that 33 AD and 70 AD. But in verse 8, all these are but the beginning of the birth pains. So this is just the start of it. Then in verse 8 or 9, "Then we will deliver you up to tribulation and put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will arise and lead many astray. And because lawlessness will be increased, the love of many will go cold. But the one who endures to the end will be saved." That's okay. And then "the gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come." So most of that passage in that beginning isn't really an issue. Verse 9, most couldn't argue it. It's like, "going to deliver you up to tribulation, put you to death. These things will happen. Nations are going to hate you. And then many will fall away." These are things that have happened from the beginning and will till the end, you know. But then you have, and many false prophets will rise and lead many astray, and because lawlessness will increase, and the love of many will grow cold. Now here's the tough verse. But the one who endures till the end will be saved. So a futurist would immediately look at that verse and says, okay, see, till the end. You're enduring, you have to endure till the end. Well, does it have to be endured till the end to the second coming? Or is this a call for perseverance? I don't even think it's to the end. Oh man, you make it through and you do all the right things. You'll get through the tribulation at 70 AD and you made it and you persevered. Well, I don't even think that's the thing. I think it's that he's saying, no, you need to persevere to the end. You need to live, not in all these ways. Live where, don't fall away. Don't false Christ. Many will come to you in my name saying, I am the Christ. They will lead many astray. Don't go down these roads. Don't fall away. I mean, we believe in perseverance of the saints. We believe that somebody has to... The end of their life, exactly. It's like you need to persevere to the end of your life. And that's what everybody has to do. You need to stay in the faith. Don't go down the road of one of these false Christs. Don't let them lead you astray.
And he holds you in the faith.
Exactly.
And what?
And he holds you in the faith.
Wow. That's a plug for the sermon. I'll just say that right now.
Really?
Well, I always have to say both of those because it's easy for us to get, you know,
Yes.
You hold on to him, he's holding you.
There's no question.
Yeah.
Always reminds me of the end of Jude. Okay. But the one who endures to the end will be saved, and the gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and the end will come. That one seems hard. So you look at that verse and you go, how can that be passed? Is really the gospel gone out to all nations and to the whole world? If you take that, write what it is, has that happened? That's where most futurists would say, well, that couldn't have happened. That's waiting till the end in the time when Revelation talks about the two witnesses, the 144,000, and then that this gospel is going to go out to all the nations. No. Oh, sorry. Yes, sir.
Why can't that verse be talking about past or beyond 70 AD?
Beyond?
If much of that so far is about 70 AD, in this gospel, the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come.
But that end, you can't, that end now isn't the end, meaning we're still in 70 AD, we're still in past. So to be consistent with the passages, you keep going, you have to say that end is still the 70 AD, the destruction of the temple. Okay? So it's, yeah. But let's just look at a few verses. Flip to Colossians. Colossians 1. I'm sorry, I'm going to flip you back. We're going to end in Colossians 1. Go to Luke 2. I'll actually look at my notes here. Maybe I can... Okay, in those days, in verse 1, in those days a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. All the world should be registered. Did that mean the whole world?
Like the entire globe?
Like the entire globe, every single person on the earth?
No, their region.
No, it did not. Acts 11, 28. And one of them, named Abagus, stood up and foretold by the Spirit that there would be a great famine over all the world. This took place in the days of Claudius. This was regional. This didn't happen over the whole world. Colossians 1. I gotta find it. Sorry. Because of the hope laid up for you in heaven, of this you have heard before in the word of the truth, the gospel, which has come to you, as indeed in the whole world it is bearing fruit and growing, as it also does among you since the day you heard it and understood the grace of God in truth. So now we're talking about the gospel specifically. And he's talking about the whole world, which, go ahead, John.
By 70 AD, Paul had already been to Rome and many places in the Roman Empire, and the other apostles had spread out in various directions.
Right.
So the gospel had gone out too much of the Roman world and beyond.
Right.
Thomas went to India, and other apostles went other directions beyond the Roman Empire.
Right. Yeah, I think I heard on, I couldn't remember on India, but I did hear that as far as India at that time. So the gospel has gone out. So one other in Colossians 1:23. If indeed you continue in the faith, here you go, perseverance, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you heard, which has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven, and of which I, Paul, became a minister. So you can see through Scripture, and it's there's a lot of places that even more that it's talking about this, their understanding of the whole world, the gospel going out, talking about the Roman Empire. So it isn't like just crazy to look at Matthew 24 and say, well, he can't mean that. He has to mean it. It went to every specific nation everywhere for that to be. Does that make sense? Okay, so back to Matthew 24. We got to keep going because this gets harder. Okay, so the end will come, and that end meaning 70 AD. This view is not taking that end meaning the second coming of Christ. So, in verse 15, so when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let the one who is on the housetops not go down to take what is in his house. And let the one who is in the field not turn back to take his cloak. And alas, for women who are pregnant and for those who are nursing infants in those days, pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath, for then there will be great tribulation, such has not been from the beginning of the world until now, no, and never will be. Okay, so there's some challenging things in that verse if you're thinking about that, is past. Okay, the abomination of desolation, we talked about that a little bit last week. Basically, if you look at, let's just to get some context, let's look at Luke 21. This is the parallel passage.
Antiochus Epiphanes, how did he tie into that? Or did he?
Antiochus Epiphanes?
Yeah.
Yes, so Antiochus Epiphanes is talked about in Daniel 9 with the 70 weeks. This really applies to the pre-tribulational view because they would say the Antichrist is going to come. That I'll come back to the Antichrist, but the Antichrist is going to come, and that Antichrist is going to set up, have peace for 7 years. That's what the literal 7-year tribulation is. He's going to say that he's going to break that peace treaty at 3.5 years, and he's going to set up the abomination of desolation in the temple. He's going to set himself up to be worshipped in the temple. Okay. Historically, in Daniel 11, we see, which almost all commentators say, that is talking about Antiochus Epiphanes, which was at like 165 or 67. Okay, he actually went into the temple, slaughtered thousands of Jews, and set up on the altar, slaughtered a pig, stuffed pork down the priest's throats, and basically set up a Greek god in the temple.
What year was this?
In 167 BC.
Oh, okay.
Then the Maccabean revolt happened, and they pushed Antiochus out, and that's the celebration of Hanukkah.
Oh.
At that time.
That was a plug for the sermon?
Okay. So, yeah, I was trying to figure out where you got it, because John said a little passage on it, and I was like, well, I wonder what passage we're in. I didn't look at it to see how it tied. But so that is basically a historical event that we can look at and go, that's going to happen again in a sense. It's a picture.
Does anybody say that was the abomination of desolation?
The problem is you... It is the abomination of desolation, but you can't say it's the final one because 2 Thessalonians 2 says that there's abomination of desolation. Well, that's already happened. So there's something else. It's a picture of one, no question. We see lots of double fulfillment in Scripture, you know, and throughout. So that's certainly going to happen. They would say, in this view, this abomination of desolation in verse 15 right here is what happened in 70 AD.
Oh, they would say that's the second one. This is the
second one right here. Okay, so see what the abomination, see how Luke, because Matthew was what? Matthew was Jewish, right? So he understood, when he wrote things, there was always Old Testament passages constantly. Because what did the Jews know? The Old Testament. So when he says abomination of desolation, he's immediately thinking of Daniel and going back to Daniel because the Jews would have known that. Well, Luke doesn't do that because Luke's a Gentile. And Luke is, I guess, writing to a Gentile, Theophilus, however you understand if that's a person or whatever, but it's certainly a Greek name. So Luke 21, in this same place, verse 20, he says, "But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation has come near." So they're saying, Luke's saying, this abomination of desolation is tied to armies surrounding Jerusalem. Okay, so then if you walk through this passage in 15, what is it talking about? This view would say, see, this has to do with local, this has to do with Jerusalem. This has to do with the time of destruction at 70 AD. Because what is it saying? "Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let the one who are on the housetops not go down. And let the one who is in the field, don't go back into the city. Don't turn back and get your cloak. And the women who are pregnant and nursing, this is going to be a tough time to flee. Pray that your flight is not in the winter on the Sabbath." I mean, this is tied to Jewish regional things. I mean, I don't know. They would say, how do you get away from that? How do you say that's future and then it's only for the Jews then at that time? That the huge distinction.
I mean, just what's like that? The birth pains are a preview to the tribulation. You know, a lot of this stuff is a preview of things to come.
In the futurist view, though, this 15, this is it right here, the 3.5 years.
Right.
Right. And so they're just saying, how can this be the 3.5 years from the future view? That's all, you know.
Okay.
So very regional, very like this is what's going on. And that was what was happening at the time before 70 AD. It was like Christians were fleeing. There was one historian said that during that time, I think it's Pella. Do you recognize that name, John? Pella, there's some region or some area outside where thousands of Jewish Christians left, and they're leaving, and they were spared because they left. They didn't get locked in the city. And the reason that I mean, this was during the time of the Passover when this originally started, and there was thousands, hundreds of thousands to upon millions of people that have come upon Jerusalem, and a lot of them got locked in, and that's how the death toll is so high during this time of 70 AD. Plus plus along with the Civil War, and it was a mess. But so regional things happening, this great tribulation, that abomination, all this is tied to the actual 70 AD and the destruction of the temple. But then you look in verse 21, here's the hard part. For then there will be great tribulation, such has not been from the beginning of the world until now. No, and never will be. That seems hard for this view. So, really, never will be. So, the Holocaust,
right.
6 million Jews died. Josephus says that during this time, that there, and some want to argue it, whatever, but let's just say it's a high number even. But he says 1.1 million Jews probably were killed and or starved to death or whatever during this time of 70 AD. But that certainly isn't 6 million Jews, along with how many other million that died just because they were homosexual or other different issues that they were killed. So there was certainly a more death toll. Sam Storms, I believe, says that here's the deal. He would take it in this play and say, you know what? There's never been a time and never will be a time, he's saying, because of this, what this passage says, that a higher percentage or a percent, let's see, how am I going to say this? That high of a percentage of Jews out of an area have been killed at one time. Maybe that's the case.
It was concentrated,
yeah. And the things that happened, and used to, sometime, look up Josephus. Josephus was a Roman historian, used to be a Jewish general, I believe, got captured, and then actually kind of became buddies with the emperor, and who then was, after Nero died, it was Vespasian, I think. They were pretty tight. He became a Roman historian for them, but he wrote a lot on this time of 70 AD. And it was ugly. The siege that happened and the death toll that happened and how it happened. There's stories of women roasting their babies and eating them. There is amazing wickedness that happened between Jew on Jew. What was happening, the Civil War, honestly, the Romans didn't destroy the temple to the point the Jews destroyed the temple before the Romans even got there. The Romans came in 66 AD, had siege on the temple, placed siege on the temple. What's that?
On this temple or Jerusalem?
On Jerusalem. And then what happened, this went on for like 2 years. Well, then the Romans had to leave because Nero died. There was civil war within the Roman Empire, so they had the general had to leave, didn't come back for a year. The time he came back, Jerusalem internally was almost destroyed because the zealots and John somebody, there was another group.
Or Janus or something?
That doesn't sound right. But there was another group that they basically were slaughtering Jews if you just didn't go along with them, because they were like, they hated Rome, the zealots and all them, and they were slaughtering Jews if you weren't going to be on our side. And there was just civil war happening inside. They burned all the grain. Some poisoned the water. They were killing themselves within themselves. And then Rome came, and it was like basically nothing left to do, you know? But so some would say this regional, what was happening there, could argue and say that was the worst from the beginning of the world until now, and no one and will never will be. One thing they would say.
As bad as that is, Ed, when you look at Revelation, it's going to be 100,000 times worse than that.
If you take it that, yeah.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
When you look at the judgments, it's way more than that.
Right.
Mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So the problem with a future view on this, if you look at that, they would say, such has never been from the beginning of the world until now, no and never will be. Well, the problem is, there is a no and never will be. It's done. So the statement doesn't quite make sense. It's like if I'm making a statement of a matter of fact that, well, it never will be, but if the end of the world's now, then why would I make a statement of never will be? So they would argue and say, well, it can't be a futurist. I'm trying to think of an example I can use to help.
Because you're saying time is going to continue beyond this event?
Right, because time's going to keep going, so it can't happen. But if time doesn't go beyond this event, then why would you make the statement? Is John the only one tracking?
No, I'm tracking.
Can you say it?
But I'm saying it makes sense to me because it's the worst thing that happened.
You have a past view, you're saying this is 70 AD and we have more time, because we did, obviously.
Right.
We're 2,000 years beyond it. But a futurist view wouldn't say there's any time beyond this.
Right.
It's done. So why would you say it never will be?
It'd be a waste of words.
Right.
Not that it couldn't be said.
So that's just an argument for the amillennial.
Okay. Okay, so and if those days had not been cut short, we're just going to go, let's see. Okay, let's go. And if those days had not been cut short, no human being would be saved. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Then if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you beforehand. So if they say to you, look, he is in the wilderness, do not go out. If they say, look, he is in the inner rooms, do not believe it. For the lightning comes from the east and shines as far as the west. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever the corpse is, the vultures will gather. We'll come back to this. I'm just going to make just a couple comments on it and we'll be done. Okay, so obviously during a time of tribulation, struggle, and what all these things that are happening, if somebody comes up and says, man, I'm the Christ, you could be led astray really easy. People during hard times, struggles, if they don't have grounded in their theology and know what they know, what happens? That's why we say, be grounded in your theology before tribulation happens, because otherwise you'll fall. Know what you believe beforehand, because what will happen is, so don't run, don't leave. Look, here is a Christ, or there he is. Do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and perform great signs and wonders so as to lead people astray, if possible, even the elect. That isn't possible. Don't believe, and then I'm just going to comment on verse 27, and then we'll come back to this a little bit next week. For as the lightning comes from the east and shines as far as the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. When the corpse, wherever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. So don't be led astray. Because this is going to be obvious when Christ comes back. Just as lightning flashes through the sky, some will argue this next passage, the next verse with the corpse and vultures, that's talking about judgment, but it could be just as lightning is obvious and unexpected, no question, no different than you see vultures flying in the sky, you see a corpse on the ground, you know it's obvious. There's something dead down there if there's vultures flying in the air. They aren't just flying up there for no reason. They're waiting and they're coming down. So just like the Son coming to the Son of Man, it's going to be obvious. And so don't be led astray. Okay? So what we'll do is we'll finish 29 through 35, and then we'll quickly, next week, we'll look at the two views together. Okay? Everybody tracking?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks.